Keem's Turn, Part 1, Descent and Deprivation. Written and read by Melina Blanc. This isn't meant to be a religious story, any more than Dracula can be said to be a religious story, so please, don't take it too seriously in that regard. This is the rest of Chapter 1. Steps Toward. A static of music came first. Jared moaned and reached for the alarm clock where it tittered under the bed, but it was lodged in the precise center of the spring supporting the mattress, as close to him as possible without being in reach of his fingertips. He pulled the pillow over his head, a wave of drowsiness sweeping him under.
One of the school gangs a wolf. Gotta make sure it's not Rose. Hurry. Come on, hurry up before the guards come. Castle guards. Got orders to take me alive.
Now where was he? Rose was there, with that shining grin she reserved for the times when he wasn't being an idiot. But now there was another noise, a beeping, so annoying. Lou had materialized and was beeping about newspaper orders. He was across the room, but Jared pushed the pillow harder over his ears and went back to Rose, who was floating across the bog. He really needed to explain how dangerous that was. He had almost reached her when there was something irritating, like a car alarm, bleeding, blaring, trying to distract him. Where was he? Orderlies. Yes, castle orderlies. It was hot now, and hard to breathe. A ringing came next, tinny, insistent, difficult to blot out. His nose was full of bedsheet. But Rose was important. He groaned and kicked the blanket down. Mustn't be distracted. Rose had to know before the fever came. He had to tell her. A fifth distraction started, a proper clamor. A metal monstrosity with a tiny hammer whizzing between two golden bells. The one the neighbor complained about. Jared sat bolt upright, eyes closed, and launched the pillow at the alarm clock, but it was angled under the cabinet legs where it couldn't be stopped. He collapsed forward into the blanket, searching for Rose. The metal monster could be ignored. Like that noise was going to work.
Going to work. Shit.
Jared sat up again, hair matted over his eyes as though it were put on backward.
What time is it?
He staggered off the bed, nearly turning his ankle in a pile of laundry, and stumbled across the room, rubbing his eyes open, squinting at the tinny alarm on the windowsill. 40 minutes behind. He could still make it if he left now, but if he was late again...
Lou is gonna flip shit.
He kicked the hammer alarm off, the other four having since given up, and shucked off the dress clothes he'd fallen asleep in, grabbing his jeans off the desk chair and searching for fresh socks.
Fuck.
They'd gone missing again. As he went to throw on a clean shirt, his eye caught on the red cord around his wrist. Struck by a sudden idea, he fingered it and took a moment to separate last night's reality from dream.
That really happened?
Shaking himself, he made to finish dressing, Aunt Judy's favorite expression echoing in his head.
One thing at a time.
With memories of his escape constantly rearing, he did his best to keep it moving. In the cheery light of day, the night's horror had taken on a shade of unreality, and yet it had happened. His sore legs were testament to that.
Focus. Crazy shit later.
He popped a mint in lieu of brushing his teeth and dragged a comb through his hair, squinting at his unshaven reflection in the mirror.
Good enough.
It was at this point that he remembered that it was Saturday. His relief was short-lived, however.
Rose.
He was still going to be late. He threw on his shoes for going socks and hurried out the door, locking it and sprinting down the stairs and out onto the sidewalk, jaywalking the intersection and jogging the next two blocks.
Dad! Did you pay
pasty ass over here!
Rose Beauregard, color coordinated with her fluorescent pink gym bag, was standing on the opposite corner, arms akimbo. Sweating in the heat, Jared hustled across the street.
You know how long I've been waiting on you?
5 minutes?
15 minutes.
She shook her head.
Son, how many times have I told you to count them late night robberies? What's your Annie gonna do when she finds out?
Stick up for me?
Rose groaned.
Aw, I don't know how you do it, but you gotta run out of puns someday. I'ma just hold out till then.
If you hold up well, you can join me at the bank next Friday.
Oh my god!
After taking a moment to recover, Rose proceeded to tell him about her week. The latest co-worker scandal, the radio station drama, the Yankees' prowess, how newly single life was treating her. The sun beat down on them as they walked, sending rivulets of sweat down Jared's back. At length, the narrative slowed.
So what's new with you? You're awful quiet. Lou giving you shit again?
No, Jared was silent for a moment. Hey, what would you do if you saw something you couldn't explain?
She raised an eyebrow at him.
Yeah, I ride the subway. I see shit I can't explain every damn day.
Yeah, but I mean like something really crazy, like physically impossible crazy.
Rose squinted at him.
You have ridden the subway, haven't you?
Never mind.
Why? What'd you see?
Jared thought about what he had seen, and how he could possibly explain this without sounding like a madman.
I think I saw a murder.
Rose stopped cold.
You what?
It was... looked like a mugging, but the guy was on the ground. There was blood.
Shit. You see the guy who did it? He see you?
I mean, I was pretty far away. And I ran off.
Her eyes opened in surprise.
You. You. Ran off? I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm glad to hear that. Knowing you, I'd expect you'd charge your dumb ass in there and get yourself killed.
Jared rubbed the back of his neck.
Right.
Good to know you got some sort of sense. But you ran off to get the cops, I suppose.
Not yet.
Not yet? What, as in you got some kind of plan to go and you ain't going yet? What are you waiting for?
Jared hesitated. He couldn't very well tell the police what he'd seen. He could fudge the details, but then what? What could he tell them that would be of any use? He imagined a cop on the beat, patrolling the street where he'd gotten a tip, a dark form hanging from the bricks above, and, in another moment, another body. He shook his head.
Chair?
I'll take care of it. I'll go to the cops.
You want to talk to Nikki? She's off duty now, but she got you.
No, it's fine. I don't want to bother her. I'll just go to the station near where I saw it.
You want to talk about it? I don't mind.
No, it was dumb not to go sooner. I'll take care of it now.
What? Right now? Right now?
This has got to be taken care of.
She marked his resolution and nodded.
Aight. But give me a call if you want to talk or something. Got it?
Yeah. Thanks, Rose.
Jared turned away, the makings of a mad plan forming in his mind.
Next time, same as usual,
she called after him.
Yeah, see ya,
he shouted back. The little bell over the door jangled as Jared stepped into the treasure box,
assailed by the usual odor of stale air freshener and staler cigarette smoke. He strode past the racks of worn clothes, making for the display at the back where the costume jewelry hung in knots, and soon found what he was looking for. He carried a fistful of chains and beads to the counter and dumped them in front of the kid on duty. The girl looked at the pile, then up at him, doubtfully.
You found Jesus, mister?
Just feeling cross today. The kid blinked at him. Never mind.
The checker shrugged and counted out his selections.
That'll be $3.
Jared paid her and headed out of the air conditioning back into the street, feeling sheepish at the bounce of his bag at his side. Crosses weren't something he'd ever pictured himself obtaining, but that was what one did in this situation, wasn't it?
Vampires? Crosses.
His shopping list was compounded from the reading of the night before, but all of the items were obvious, engraved in popular culture. The next stop was the abandoned lot catty-corner from his father's bookstore. On the way, he stepped into a small grocery and bought a bulb of garlic. At the lot, too, he quickly found what he was searching for and added a few splintered pieces of paling to his satchel, keeping an eye on the bookstore, lest anyone appear in the window. For a hammer, he bagged a hefty rock as well.
What else?
Holy water. How could he possibly get holy water?
It's not like I can steal it from a church. I don't know any priests.
Maybe he could ask Rose to get some? He shook his head. He could imagine that conversation.
The hell do you want holy water for?
On impulse, he went back to the grocery and picked up a bottle of water. It could be a bluff, if nothing else.
Okay.
His fingers tugged at the cord around his left wrist. He had the supplies. Now all he needed were some answers. Aunt Judy answered the door, her short, graying hair a frizzled halo around her head. Like Jared, she wore a look of perpetual worry, which was, unlike Jared's, augmented by enormous spectacles.
Jared! Come in, come in!
Jared edged his way between the chests and piled boxes to the sagging armchair she motioned him into. Judy's apartment was akin to the back room of a museum, and her brain was its card catalog. She bustled off to the kitchen, returning a moment later with a silver tray of braided loaves.
No thanks. I had challah bread I could eat last night.
She made a tutting noise and set the tray on a low table.
Water? You need to stay hydrated.
Yeah, thanks.
She brought him a cup, then sat and clasped her hands, peering anxiously at him.
Is everything all right? You never come on Saturdays.
Sorry. I need to ask you something.
Of course.
You remember this wristband Bobby gave me?
He pulled at it.
I think she said it was for protecting against evil.
The red string, she nodded. For repelling the evil eye.
I don't get it mixed up with this irreverent celebrity fashion, she added with a touch of acid.
This isn't an accessory. It is a powerful symbol rooted in tradition.
The evil eye? What does that mean exactly?
It refers to a sort of psychic ill will that causes harm.
Like physical harm?
It could be.
So it's a sort of evil repellent?
She frowned and shook her head.
It is a boundary between the sacred life and the profane. A binding that holds evil at bay, but also a proclamation and a promise. It is said that a red mark in the hour of need has more than once spared our people from destruction.
She gave him an appraising look.
But you were awfully curious today. I thought you didn't believe, Yared.
I never said I didn't believe. I just never had a reason to believe.
But now you do?
I think I've found something I can believe in.
Judy's gaze came piercing out of the centers of her spectacles.
What did you see?
I saw something bad. Something evil. And if there's evil, there must be good, too.
She gave him a soft smile.
There are many people who wouldn't think that way. Would you like to talk about it?
No, I think there's something I gotta do to make it better.
Judy nodded.
We all have our part to play.
She leaned forward and touched his hand.
You know, I'm happy to support you any way I can.
Thanks. Actually, there is something.
Anything?
He hesitated, embarrassed. Judy's interest in the esoteric was largely academic.
Do you have any other talismans?
She pursed her lips.
What sort of talismans?
Against evil? Mom? That sort of thing?
Her eyes held him.
Are you in trouble, Yared?
Jared shook his head.
No. I mean, you know, the usual.
He flushed, averting his eyes.
I could use a little luck.
She frowned at this, but nodded.
Well, there's always the Morgane Dorvid.
The shield?
Its historical use is limited, but of course it's been widely adopted. I have one from your grandmother.
Oh, no, I couldn't.
She waved her hand, already rising.
No. She would have wanted you to have it.
She went to one of the wooden chests, checkered with drawers, and pulled a drawer from the bottom left, disentangling a thin band of metal from a collection of brooches and earrings. She brought it back and held it out for him, the little star glinting as it swiveled on its chain. Jared accepted it with gratitude.
Now, if you want something with a little more history behind it, I'll see what I can find you. Just wait there.
Jared obliged as she made for a corner. He examined the star.
Isn't this the one she always wore?
Yes,
came Judy's voice from behind a stack of shifting boxes.
After they fled Germany, she never took it off.
He hesitated, then put it on, fumbling for an age with the clasp, and slipped it under his shirt. Judy came back with a sheaf of papers.
Here, she said, spreading them on the table. Everything the Sterns have collected. The steps toward the darkness off.
She paged through them.
Protections against the evil eye. Here's one for safe childbirth. And for repelling demons. A few for luck in love, a charm against black magic, the Seal of Solomon, a prayer for health, blessings for house and home.
She went on, stooping and laying out brittle pages and scrolls. Jared pointed to a couple.
Can I use these?
Of course. But be careful not to damage the seal. It bears the name of God.
Okay.
And Yared.
Yeah?
When you are up against the wicked in the world, all of this...
She shook her head.
It's only paper. Though the language on it is holy, all the light that will protect you, your connection to that...
She reached out and touched her fingers to his chest.
It's inside.
Jared stared at her, and she smiled.
You've always had the makings of faith, Yared. Reach into that, and you'll be surprised what you find.
He was silent for a moment.
Thanks, he murmured. It's been a huge help, thanks.
He rose to go.
Are you sure there isn't anything else I can do?
It's more than enough. Guten Shabbos.
Back in the heat outside Judy's apartment, Jared rummaged through his bag, inspecting his new acquirements. Pulling out the Seal of Solomon, he rolled it up and tucked it into one of the deep pockets in his pants so it wouldn't get crumpled in the jumble that was his satchel. He'd gone back to his apartment between meeting Rose and the supply run to grab some food and fix himself a couple sandwiches for the road, and now he made his way a few blocks to sit on a bench in a paved-over park and eat, as pigeons milled around his crumbs. It was already mid-afternoon, but the days were long, and the darkness was hours away. He polished off the sandwich and brushed down his fingers, dug in his bag for the book he had brought, and leaned back against the wooden slats to kill the remaining daylight, finishing the research of the night before. Jared stood and stretched with a groan. The dying sunlight filtered through the leaves of the trees, dappling the path. He had finished the rest of the sandwiches he had brought, and the book with them, having skimmed the sections irrelevant to his purposes. He thumbed back through the dog-eared pages.
Sacramental wafers, wild rose, sacred bullet.
He didn't know how to get any of those things. He hefted his bag, feeling the reassuring weight of all the things he did have. Was this enough? Was he really going through with this?
I am such a fucking idiot.
He headed on, away from Judy's apartment, retracing the steps he had taken the night before. Past pizza joints and bodegas, endless scaffolding, blocks of apartment buildings, the nightclub with a neon sign that Mr. Starr had passed on his way to Miss Moon's offices. What ifs began to rear their ugly heads as he walked, tormenting him with doubts. He fell into a recap, followed by a conclusion.
She takes a step closer as her co-workers get comfortable using my limbs for furniture. I catch her eyeing my clavicle.
It's over, Mr. Starr.
Through the curls of smoke from her cigarette, Miss Moon smiles at me like a spider at a fly.
Tell me, before you bite the dust, whatever possessed you to come after me?
It's a risky job, but someone's gotta do it.
How brave of you to step up to bat.
Dear God, just kill me, why don't you?
All in good time. But really, out of all the suckers in this city, why you? Why do you need to risk your life?
This is my city. A city where good people work hard to get the best they can out of life. They got enough problems without monsters like you sucking them dry. Coming after you's not a choice. It's a moral imperative.
Yes, but why you?
She leans over me, blowing a ring of smoke in my face.
You were chosen for a starring role.
Somebody's gotta do it, and I've made it this far. Seems like there's a reason for that.
But what is going to save you now? Your morals?
She titters maniacally.
I think not. You have been a pain in my neck far too long. It is high time I was a pain in yours.
As if on cue, Terran busts in through the window, showering us with broken glass. The ones on top of me let up, squealing, as my partner starts knocking heads. One of them goes tottering past, blinded by the Venetian blinds over her face. About time, I yell, rolling sideways and snatching up my gun. With me clear, he pulls his, and we let him have it, pumping out wood before they know what's hitting them. They stagger around, looking like freshly punched juice boxes before going up in greasy puffs of smoke. Miss Moon is slinking into the background, making for the stairs. Don't let her get away! We break through the remaining ranks, dashing in pursuit. She's on the land and above us as we slam into the stairwell. I bound up the stairs, Terran lagging behind. Another flight and we crash out the access door onto the roof. Just in time to see a particularly self-satisfied looking bat flapping off into the distance. The last of the horde trickles up the stairs and circles us, groping the air with their claws. You're too late, I inform him, as the crimson sun makes its appearance on the horizon. Or hasn't that dawned on ya? So sue me. I've had a bad day. They spurt into smoke on all sides, and we're left alone in the morning light. Maybe the sun got her too, Terran says, with his usual grating optimism. I resist decking him. Not a chance, I mutter instead. You don't know that dame like I do. But for now, I'm going home to sleep like the dead.
Jared sighed. It wasn't much farther. A public square, a lower density of buildings, the parking lot. Adrenaline pounded through him harder the nearer he got. It was fully dark now.
There probably won't be anyone there.
At last, the alley with the broken lamps halfway down, the gate still ajar. And there, he froze. There was a figure at the end of the alley, reclining against a brick wall. It straightened as he drew up. A hood was drawn down over its face, but Jared knew, instinctively, it was the monster. Thank you for listening. Starcross, Keen's Turn, is a one-woman show and a labor of love. And I'd love to hear from you. You can find me on social media, at MelanaBlog, or through my website contact form. Links in the show notes. Stick around. I'm looking forward to what happens next.